Well, equities haven't been held back for too long, have they? And they are certainly back with a vengeance today, even as markets accept the rate cuts are going to come later in the United States. But it's more to do with earnings, with several of the Magnificent Seven still to report this week. But maybe today's boost will be short-lived. Depends on the numbers, doesn't it? And on that, there's not a lot of data around overnight, but a lot of PMIs today for the UK, US and Europe, manufacturing and services. Maybe that's going to help explain the very different tack being taken by central banks both sides of the Atlantic. It is Tuesday, the 23rd of April, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, US shares have bounced back with a vengeance, not quite recouping the losses from last week, but not bad for one day, with a 1.1% rise in the NASDAQ, 0.9% for the S&P at close, climbing back over 5,000, and a 0.7% lift in the Dow. The Russell 2000 is also up 1%. That's all quite a bit lower than the levels that we were at as we entered that last hour of power in the United States. In the UK, the FTSE 100 is up 1.6%. It hit an all-time high overnight. In Germany, 0.7%. For the DAX. Bonds have calmed down a fair bit, so 10-year Treasury yields down just one basis point. Yields are up one basis point for 10 years in Canada, but down two in the UK, down nine basis points in Italy, just one basis point lower, though, for 10-year yields in Germany. Aussie 10 years, they rose six basis points yesterday to 4.32%. This morning on futures, they are just one or two basis points lower than that. And a small drop in the US dollar on the DXY, a 0.5% rise in the Aussie dollar, up to just short of 64.5 US cents. The Canadian dollar up to 0.4%, but not much going on with Europe as far as currencies are concerned. There's a 0.2% drop in the pound, and oil down slightly. WTI is down a third of a percent. Brent down 0.2% to just over 87 a barrel. So, quiet day. It's Sally All today from JB Weir in Sydney who's joining me. To be honest, Sally, I'm finding it hard to get excited about anything really today. I mean, it was fairly quiet yesterday and overnight. But I guess it's US equities, isn't it? I mean, look at NVIDIA shares up 4% today. We're back to dreaming about AI, aren't we? Yeah. I mean, we just can't wait for machines to take over.
Yeah, that's right. It's that big mega cap tech complex that seems to be driving the price action of late. So we saw, you know, some of those stocks like NVIDIA, you know, have a decent decline on Friday night. And it looks like, you know, ahead of a number of those big stocks releasing their earnings results later this week, investors have woken up on Monday morning with a more positive attitude and want to have exposure to that story. So it's really been, again, that tech complex leading equity markets and starting the week ahead of earnings on a positive note.
Well, it's not all the Magnificent Seven, though, is it? It's the AI side. So Tesla is the opposite, isn't it? So Tesla's down 3.5%. We don't know what their earnings are like, but obviously not good because they've just announced a significant price drop, which seems to have upset investors a little bit. But we hear that, don't we? That, you know, it's getting hard to shift EVs as you know, to meet expectations.
Yeah, that's right. So I think that the sales story for Tesla is obviously one that's worried investors, and then of course there's the broader context for electric vehicles, which is that, you know, China is making many of them. And so, you know, I don't know that flooding the market is probably the right phrase, but you know, that makes it more difficult for Tesla to sell their vehicles. And so, you know, you're right. I think in some ways, you know, what started as a Magnificent Seven probably doesn't look so magnificent for some of those stocks, Tesla in particular, Apple to a lesser extent. And it is really the stocks that are highly leveraged to the artificial intelligence narrative that, you know, have been the genuine outperformers in that space.
So it's interesting that there is so much enthusiasm there. I mean, it could all come crashing down, couldn't it, when we see the earning predictions, because obviously Netflix disappointed with their forward guidance. So we've got to wait a bit, a day or two still, before Microsoft and Alphabet are after the close on Thursday. Meta is after the close Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Tesla is after the close on Tuesday. So we've still got a bit of a wait before we see what these numbers are. And who knows? I mean, you know, the enthusiasm we're seeing today could quickly dissipate, couldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So there's a lot priced into these stocks. You know, they've had a fantastic run. And so, you know, effectively we're at a point now where, you know, the earnings, you know, probably don't just have to come in as expected, but probably continue to surprise to the upside. And that's been, you know, very much the story with a stock like Nvidia, where, you know, quarter after quarter, they just basically smash it out of the park. Their results are just so far above what the consensus is. So, but eventually, like all things, you know, the market, you know, or the consensus eventually catches up, and it becomes more difficult for these stocks to outperform relative to expectations. So, you know, we'll see how we go this week. But I think, you know, we do go into this set of earnings with the market looking, you know, more on the expensive side of most valuation measures, positioning, you know, despite the sort of 5% decline so far, positioning still feels pretty full. You know, most people are very much, you know, owners of equities. So therefore, you know, the earnings numbers are going to have to come out, you know, I think pretty strong in order to justify where we are in terms of valuations. Well, it's an interesting setup.
Yeah. Mm. Well, we'll see what the week brings, won't we? It's been calm on bond markets. I guess we sort of know where we stand at the moment as far as central banks are concerned. I guess the exception might be the UK. So there's a bit of an adjustment there, isn't there? As the expectations of a Bank of England cut is sort of being brought forward. So we can see that in sterling moving down today. The FTSE 100, as I said earlier, at a record high. So that's obviously a reaction to the fact that, you know, maybe the BOE is going to go earlier than expected.
Yeah, I think that's the UK is looking interesting because, you know, there were some comments from BOE member Ramsden, who sort of hinted in his speech at a readiness to cut rates in May, which is certainly, you know, a lot earlier than most were expecting. And so it really speaks to this whole idea that markets are grappling with, you know, around divergence. So we sort of know the Fed story really well. The Fed's basically had three inflation numbers that have come in stronger than expected. That whole story around a mid-year start to the easing cycle has now been kicked back into the second half of 2024. And then on the other hand, there are other central banks like the ECB who, you know, from all intents and purposes, officials there remain really committed to starting the easing cycle in mid-year. And then in the UK, I think, you know, the market's really grappling with this in a way. A lot of the economists over there are sort of saying, no, the UK is a bit more like the US. And some of the rhetoric we're getting out of the central bank is saying, like, you know, we're potentially ready to go in the middle of the year. And I think it's a really hard one because, you know, there are certain things like services inflation and wages growth, which are probably tracking at levels higher than the Bank of England was forecasting in February. GDP has been a bit better than expected of late in the UK, but the jobs data have been weak. So, you know, very, very much conflicting signals. And so no surprise that, you know, the market's basically hedged its bets for June. I think there's about 16 basis points of cuts priced in for that meeting. And then more than a full 25 basis point cut priced into September.
Bit of a stretch comparing the UK economy and its growth with what we're seeing in the United States, though, isn't it, really?
Indeed, yeah.
So on that, for the United States, I mean, 10-year Treasury's flat today. Is that where they're going to be now for a while, or will we see a bit more speculation? I was reading a piece in the Wall Street Journal this morning about whether 10-year treasuries could hit 5%. It seems to be, well, it's unlikely unless we see, you know, but I mean, the only point is that, you know, there's not much of a term premium on 10 years right now, but even that's not going to push it up to 5% unless we'd have, you know, to see things push back further, or if there's any talk of a rate rise, then maybe we'll get there, but otherwise perhaps not.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, you know, when we look at 10-year treasuries, they've had an 80 basis point sell-off since really late December of last year. So that's a decent move, and it's taken place over 3 or 4 months. And we've had a significant repricing of the US front end. So if we think about, you know, where we were at the beginning of this year, you know, there were a huge number of cuts priced in for 2024, and that's been pared back significantly. So yes, look, you know, my view would be that, you know, maybe you could sort of go another 20 basis points higher, you know, if we continue to get a bit more solid news on growth and inflation. But I do agree with that. I think if we're talking about 5% on the US 10-year, then we're probably talking about a world in which the market is starting to flirt with the idea that the Fed resumes rate hikes.
Yeah. All right. Well, data-wise today, there's not been a lot, has there? Producer prices for Canada, they were pretty much as expected, maybe a bit higher. The raw materials price index is up quite a bit month on month, but we know resource prices have been rising, so no surprises there. Mm-hmm. Their new housing price index flat for the month, so no big real moves coming out of Canada. It was a dead day for data, wasn't it, really?
It was, yep. Yep, some days are like that. Interesting, though, that, you know, ECB President Lagarde, you know, gave a speech over at Yale University, and she talked about, you know, really important that the US and Europe don't have a subsidy race. So she sort of said that's a zero-sum game if we both try and out-compete each other on the sorts of subsidies that we give to each other. And
I think the man she was talking to might have been in court today, but he might not have heard her.
Perhaps. But, you know, it was interesting. She sort of said, you know, we need to work together and sort of almost be the good citizens of international trade and use our collective weight to discourage others from bad behaviour. So I think there was, you know, in some ways there were a real plea to, you know, for the US not to go it alone and sort of start this race to the bottom, but to work with Europe and sort of making sure that the global trading environment, you know, remains a reasonably competitive and functional one.
Well, I think her point was it would be easier then, wouldn't it, to come down harder or more robustly, correct, I think in her words, on those who break the rules.
Yeah,
I wonder who she's talking about there. Look, today it's PMI day, really. That's all. But, you know, that's enough, isn't it? So chiefly Europe and the US, there's separate ones for the UK and for European countries as well. And of course, it's broken down for services and manufacturing. So that'll tell us a lot. In particular, it'll tell us how, for Europe, how much, you know, Germany is perhaps falling behind the rest of the pack. And it'll give us that comparison between Europe and the US, which might help explain, you know, the different approaches being taken by the central banks.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, there's no doubt that the global PMI has lifted in recent months. And so, you know, I guess in a pre-COVID world, things are still a little bit mucked up post-COVID. But in a pre-COVID world, you know, that would be sending you a pretty strong signal about the state of the global economic cycle and the whole reflation narrative. But I think one thing that we can say and one thing we are seeing in those PMI numbers is that some of those really stark divergences that sort of plagued that data in the last couple of years are starting to unwind. And so, you know, we saw a huge divergence between services PMI and manufacturing, and they are now sort of coming back together a little bit. Huge divergences between, as you mentioned, the US and Europe, that's starting to resolve a little bit. So, yeah, always interesting to get the latest update on those numbers because they're certainly, you know, full of interesting information.
Mm. And that's almost it, really. New home sales for the US. That's just about it, really. So another relatively quiet day today. So a reason for us to leave it there. Good to talk, Sally. We'll catch you next time.
Cheers, Phil. Thank you.
And that is it. That's Tuesday morning on The Morning Call from NAB. I'm Phil Dobby. Thanks for listening in today. I'll catch you again tomorrow morning. See you then.